Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care. Nahastan anila nijonne go shavotya, nijonne go shavotya. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Ha ha ha!
from the drum Dakota Travelers off their ABBA record CD, Dakota Travels, live at Barrie Island. The name of that powwow song was Victory Song, honoring the Native warriors of the Little Big Horn Battle. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, in June of 1878, 700 U.S. Army soldiers of the 7th Cavalry, under the command of Colonel George Armstrong Custer, fought an alliance of Lakota, Cheyenne, and Arapaho warriors. It was a great victory for the Indians. Custer, along with many Army soldiers, were killed at the Battle of the Greasy Grass Creek, more commonly called the Little Bighorn. A square greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kiddushi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Recently, I had the pleasure to visit an Assiniboine friend of mine, Mr. Sal Whitehorse. Whitehorse is host of the Native radio program, Indigenous Sounds. The show broadcasts live Saturday afternoons from 3 to 5 p.m. on Sarasota, Florida's community radio station, WSLR-FM. Indigenous Sounds can also be heard every Saturday afternoon live on the internet at www.wslr.org. Today's Wolf Mountain Radio program features Mr. Whitehorse's live interview of yours truly, Ones, in the WSLR studio. Whitehorse invited me to share my thoughts on Native issues on his radio show. I want to thank Sal Whitehorse for asking me to be his program guest. Yat Kiddushi Native Center wishes to express our appreciation to Sal Whitehorse for hosting Indigenous Sounds. It is important for the public to hear the voice of Native peoples. It is a perspective still not very often heard by the general public. Native radio helps inform and educate people on Indigenous cultures, histories, and contemporary issues. This is why Indigenous Sounds and other Native radio programs, such as Yat Kiddushi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, is so important to be on the air. Many people do not know the true history of relations between Euro-Americans and Native peoples. This needs to be corrected, and it needs to be told. Many people are oblivious to current-day issues Indigenous peoples are still faced with. The U.S. government continues to impose its authoritarian colonial rule over American Indians and Alaskan Natives. The violation of human rights sanctioned by U.S. congressional legislation and presidential orders is a history of great injustice. America's theft of Native lands by warfare, by forced removal of tribes off their homelands onto barren reservations, the infamous 1887 General Allotment Act, which ended tribal communal land tenure, the Christian Manifest Destiny era, forced assimilation during the boarding schools, the 1934 Indian Reorganization Act, imposing white government systems which allow Washington to control tribal governments, the 1950s termination of 109 tribal nations, and the 1856 Relocation Act that sent many Indians to cities for so-called job training and menial low-wage work, exemplify 223 years of abusive U.S. government policy towards Native Americans. This history needs to be understood as racial ethnic apartheid, in other words, cultural genocide. The violations of every treaty by Washington is a total disrespect and disregard of Native nations' sovereignty and Indigenous rights of self-determination.
indigenous peoples are invisible to most Americans. Others have attitudes of racism, discrimination, and xenophobia. Some people still have outdated stereotypes about Indian peoples. American Indians are not respected as equal members of modern-day society. American Indians have the highest levels of poverty. Living in squalid conditions, we have the lowest socioeconomic status of people in the U.S. Substandard health care, high unemployment, alcoholism, and low educational levels are serious problems throughout Indian country. Tragically and criminally speaking, the entire collective geographical land area of all native lands in what is now the United States is a mere 2.3% of America's total land area. That means indigenous peoples have lost more than 97% of our ancestral territories since Europeans first washed ashore on our tribal homelands. The less than 3% remaining so-called Indian land is under the jurisdiction of the U.S. government. We American Indians no longer have property title to any lands. American Indians do not own the lands we now live on. It is United States property. This is why many sacred lands and waters are desecrated, exploited, and polluted by government agencies and corporations. This is not only a crime against American Indians, it is a crime against Mother Earth. Mr. Whitehorse is Assiniboine, one of the Nakota Sioux Great Plains Buffalo peoples. He also has native Taino Caribbean heritage. Whitehorse's radio program, Indigenous Sounds, features native music, storytelling, interviews, and host commentaries. An important aspect of White Horse's show is news about issues affecting Native people in WSLR's broadcast area. Several examples include disturbance to Native sites by archaeologists and developers, and the misuse of Native culture and ceremony by non-Indians, often for money. This is why White Horse established the American Indian Movement Sarasota in order to preserve and protect the American Indian culture, traditions, and ways of life. These are concerns shared by Yad Kiddushi Native Center. The first segment of White Horse's show that we will hear is a telephone interview with a Creek brother, Mr. Adam Long. Mr. Long is a spokesperson for the Misoki Food Sovereignty Initiative, MFSI, works to enable the Muscogee Creek people and their neighbors to provide for their food and health needs now and into the future through sustainable agriculture, economic development, community involvement, cultural and educational programs. FMSI is a fine example of what Native peoples are doing within their communities across Indian country. Yad Kiddushi Native Center endorses these efforts. After the segment about MFSI, you will hear segments of White Horse's interview of me, Oness, and some comments by my Taino friend, Canuck Saber Edgar Rodriguez. Canuck Saber and I were in Sarasota, Florida, attending a symposium about the island of Vieques. As many Wolf Mountain Radio listeners know, Vieques is part of the native Taino homeland of the Caribbean island of Boracay, now called Puerto Rico. In addition to the special cultural history of Vieques, the island was taken by the U.S. government as a war prize from the 1898 Spanish-American War. During World War II, the U.S. military stationed warships there. After the Second World War, the U.S. Navy used Vieques as a bombing and missile testing weapons range. This and U.S. war game exercises had a great detrimental impact to the people and ecosystem of the island. Vieques is a very serious social and environmental justice example of American policy. It is a similar situation to what has happened to many Native American lands and communities. Following the Vieques Symposium, we were invited to be guests of Mr. Whitehorse's Indigenous Sounds radio broadcast. The program aired live on Saturday, September 26, 2009, on WSLR-FM. My friend Whitehorse has given permission to Wolf Mountain Radio to share this recording. Please listen now to this special interview program with Mr. Whitehorse and yours truly, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kanawintokwisin to all of our relations.
It's 3 o'clock here on WSLR-FM 96.5 in Sarasota. Time for Indigenous Sounds. I'm your host, Whitehorse, once again back on the air. Took a week off last week. Was up in St. Pete today. We'll talk about that. Had an archaeologist digging on a burial mound. I went up there to witness it and document what went on. And I also have an in-studio guest that we will speak later on today. And also, I have a guest that will be on. I'm going to give him a call in about 5 minutes. Adam Long of Muscogee Creek, that's visiting from Oklahoma. So, great show today. Hope that you will tune in. This is Indigenous Sounds, and I am Whitehorse. Okay, on Indigenous Sounds, on the telephone right now, I have Adam Long from, he's a Muscogee Creek from Oklahoma. Adam, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Very good to meet you. How are you doing today?
Pretty good.
What do you have Ed, to offer here on Indigenous Sounds?
Just want, I guess, introduce myself. Like you said, Adam Long, currently working here in Okmulgee, Oklahoma with the Muscogee Food Sovereignty Initiative. And to bring up a few topics about food sovereignty, the issues that we're dealing with here in Indian country, one of the concerns that we have, I guess, just within the larger society that's affecting Native communities are many of the diseases that come up when eating unhealthy foods. There's a high rate of diabetes, there's a high rate of heart disease, high cholesterol, high blood pressure within Native communities that is disproportionate to the larger society. There's not as much of an access to healthy foods. Most, I guess, oppressed communities, you know, they have to go towards Walmart and they have to buy mostly processed foods. So here, we're trying to promote gardening, promote a healthy lifestyle, active lifestyle, so that we can get the Native youth into learning how to live healthy and live longer. Food has an effect on the entire community. So we have these different health issues that's affecting the elders within the community. So they're not living as long and they're not having as much time as they need to pass on knowledge. So it's going to have an impact on the elders and the youth to keep these cultural practices going. In the process of learning, the youth, from learning from the elders, traditional foods like Safki and Chatahaga, you know, learning how to make those foods, learning how to prepare those foods, learning, you know, how healthy traditional diets really are and how it's going to improve their lifestyle, how it's going to improve their longevity. And also in the process, the appreciation for these traditional foods will give more appreciation for the culture. Again, that's going to help the youth and the elders appreciate their culture and then want to use the language, pass on the language, to teach these activities in the language. When you're dealing with Native issues, there's different organizations out there that do that. There's the American Indian Movement that deals heavily with mascot issues. There's other environmental organizations out there that are working as part of the larger society to change diets, to get more people involved in the community. And so I think that for the traditional Native communities, you know, working within food issues, working with food sovereignty, you know, it's going to help strengthen Native communities, and just want to let people know of how interconnected all these issues are. And if they want to go into, you know, working in Native communities, or they want to try to promote Native issues, you know, if you start at the foundation of our foods, that can take you a long ways into having a deep impact on the Native community that, you know, you're trying to help, wanted to bring that up to let everyone kind of know within the indigenous community all these other organizations that are out there that they can help, that they can donate to, and how empowering that is for Native communities.
Okay, do you have a website or someplace people may go and to get some more information on this?
Yeah, there's the Muskogee, www.muskogeefood.org, and the Muskogee is spelled in the traditional way, M-V-S-K-O-K-E, so www.mvskokefood.org. Anyone that visits that website, just take a look, because we have newsletters on there too. We have an archive of things, and what's interesting about those newsletters is we do have traditional recipes, you know, how to make traditional foods. We bring up issues within the Native community. We talk about the linkage between culture and food, and we bring all these things up in the newsletter and make the community aware of what MFSI is doing. And you'll see a lot of the grassroots work that people are doing here, and hopefully it'll encourage you or the listeners to want to start their own garden. I guess some people think about gardening and they think, oh, you know, all this work, all this hard work, but it's really rewarding in the end to grow something, to take care of something, to help something grow, and then to see it to its fruition and be able to eat it, and the following year to use the seeds to plant again. It may be in the beginning very difficult. There's a learning curve that everyone has to go through, but it's really rewarding because you get to provide your meals for your children or for yourself. In the process, you're going to want to grow more food. You're going to want to provide for your family, and that's a part of the sovereignty. And wanting to determine the fate or how you want your family to live. We have a radio broadcast. On the radio broadcast, we have lessons in the Muskogee language, and there's also stories. So you can get good cultural experience, I guess you can say, from listening to the broadcast. So check out the website, and you can hear those things on it and learn a lot more, and hopefully you're encouraged to start your own garden where you live, or maybe work with those in the communities that have community gardens.
Hello, my friend. My name's Oness. I'm a visiting Native radio journalist here, and I really appreciate what you've just said. On many of our communities, there are good people like yourself working to reestablish our traditional cultural, spiritual life ways. One of the concerns I have is the issue of what I call, many of our people call, biocolonialism. And I know the Indigenous Peoples Council on Biocolonialism website does a great job, and Winona LaDuke and a lot of her writings. And what I'm concerned about is basically what they call genetically modified organisms, or genetic engineering. And in agriculture, we're having these multinational corporations like Archer Daniels Midland, ADM, Monsanto, DuPont, Cargill, and they're really forcing upon not only American Indians, but as a so-called American Indian, that's my priority, our people, forcing upon us to be using these so-called genetically modified seeds that already have pesticides, herbicides, insecticides. And we were healthy peoples because we had traditional genetic crops that our peoples knew for millennia. I'm wondering if you might talk about what some people call Frankenstein food, and how one of the aspects of colonization, from my point of view, is this whole genetic engineering by multinational agribusiness.
Okay. If you look at the company like Monsanto, or just not only Monsanto, but this whole agricultural industry that's going towards monoculturing. So if you take a look at the corn, they've made, like you were talking about, genetically modified corn that's genetically resistant to Roundup. So they're called Roundup Ready corn seeds. So the concern there is that they want to monoculture all of the agriculture. So monoculture corn, monoculture soybeans, monoculture potatoes. Like Winona LaDuke, it's better to have the richness of biodiversity because it allows for different plants to yield higher in different areas. So you have, in terms of corn, there's hundreds and hundreds of varieties of corn, and they all grow at different altitudes, in different environments, in different conditions. And the problem with monoculturing is that these corns aren't able to withstand the conditions that these other corns that were adapted to the environment, that they were looked after by the traditional people. Certain seeds were selected because they're able to be in certain conditions. And so the colonialism is to make us dependent upon the monoculture. So as they produce more and more corn with these genetic modifications, and as these GMOs start to get into the traditional corn and start to genetically modify those seeds that were at one time traditional, and they now have become Roundup Ready and can now only be produced if there's fertilizer, if there's Roundup. They're not able to grow in the natural environment like they used to because they've been quote-unquote infected by these GMO seeds.
Right, and these GMO seeds actually contaminate a lot of our traditional crop. My auntie was very well respected as knowing a lot of our medicinal plants as well as food. And for example, the spraying of blueberries fields where I come from historically with glutathione as well as GMO now has really contaminated a lot of Penobscot and Passamaquoddy traditional homelands where our medicinal plants are now dying. So I want to thank you. I'm a guest here, but my friend Mr. Whitehorse said, you know, me jump in and say hello to you.
Oh, appreciate that. Appreciate that. Keeping our traditional foods is very important, not just for our sovereignty, because it helps us to eat healthy and determine our own lifestyle, but also these companies, they want farmers to be dependent on these seed distribution companies like Monsanto. So watching films like Food and Company or Controlling Our Food or Fresh, you know, there's these different movies out there that are showing these farmers that are now, because of Monsanto, are dependent on them to get their seeds. And not only that, Monsanto is now producing so-called terminator seeds. You plant it once into the ground, and then after that, it's not fertile anymore. So you see, the colonialism is not just affecting native communities, but it affects the society at large.
That's right, and they're doing that all over the world. If you listen to Vandiva Shiva from India, for example, you know, she's a very wonderful person that speaks about this agricultural colonialism.
She's doing a lot of good work with a lot of adversity, because most of those and most of the farmers in India are now using Monsanto's cotton seeds, which don't yield as much, which need a lot of fertilizer, and there's been an increase in suicides for those farmers because they're not able to provide for their families like they used to. But at the same time, because Monsanto is in charge of the seed distribution, they don't have a choice anymore. They can only grow the cotton seeds that they have. I think that it's good that the native communities are, you know, working to preserve their traditional seeds, because there's going to come a time when the monoculture, when this society that has been built up to the point that it is not always going to sustain itself at this level. So it's very important that native communities continue to grow the traditional foods so that we can sustain ourselves, you know, into the future with the food that the Creator has given us, the things that we've been able to grow in our own way. And I think it is going to help out humanity in the future as we continue to grow and in our alliances and trying to fight the companies that are trying to undermine human sovereignty.
Uh-huh.
Okay, once again, thank you very much for being on. If you can hang on just a minute, I want to talk to you a moment off the air. Let me get some music started for the listeners. And once again, you're listening to Indigenous Sounds, and I am Whitehorse.
Thank you.
For centuries, indigenous people have suffered great loss of life and land at the hands of international market forces. The flow of energy and other resources from native territories fuels the world's economy. With the growth of the genetic industry, native peoples have been targeted for yet another resource. They're being asked to give up the living blueprints of their physical bodies, their deoxyribonucleic acid, DNA. The Human Genome Diversity Project, or HGDP, is an international effort comprised of geneticists, anthropologists, linguists, and lawyers. They will collect genetic samples from over 500 native populations and then place them in the world's largest genetic library. From within this library of genes and chromosomes, researchers hope to attain anthropological enlightenment and find the answers to the origins of humankind, or perhaps find the keys to the treasure box of medical cures. But for many native organizations, the Human Genome Diversity Project is another assault on the world's indigenous peoples.
You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Gitishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices shares interview segments with my Assiniboine friend, Sal Whitehorse. Whitehorse is host of the weekly WSLR-FM radio show, Indigenous Sounds. I had the honor to be his studio guest during his September 26, 2009 Saturday afternoon program. In a moment, we will return to that broadcast. In the earlier Whitehorse interview segment with Creek brother Adam Long of the Muskogee Food Sovereignty Initiative, I briefly mentioned the fine native organization, the Indigenous Peoples Council on Biocolonialism, IPCB, assists Indigenous peoples in the protection of their genetic resources, knowledge, cultural and human rights from the negative effects of biotechnology. I wanted to present a brief Indigenous Peoples Council on Biocolonialism news alert about threats to Indigenous peoples by the Human Genome Diversity Project that Yat Gitishi Native Center is likewise very alarmed about. Wolf Mountain Radio encourages listeners to learn more by visiting the Indigenous Peoples Council on Biocolonialism's website, www.ipcb.org. Once again, the Indigenous Peoples Council on Biocolonialism's website, www.ipcb.org. The flute song you heard prior to the Indigenous Peoples Council on Biocolonialism's public service announcement was from Coyote Old Man off his 1998 Xenotropic Music CD. The name of that song was Otter Visit. We shall now continue to listen to the September 26, 2009 Indigenous Sounds Native Radio Program. Host Whitehorse's guest is yours truly, Ones of Yat Gitishi Native Center.
Hi, this is Jana Michoni, and you're listening to Whitehorse on WSLR 96.5 FM in Sarasota, Florida.
And once again, you are listening to Indigenous Sounds. As I mentioned earlier, I have a guest in the studio today, Ones. How are you doing today?
Ashkwe, greetings, sir. Thank you for letting me visit with you.
Very good. And you came all the way up from Fort Myers?
Correct. I'm here as part of a two-day event where I'll be speaking tomorrow on the international struggle or Indigenous people's movement for justice. And when we say justice, we're really talking about sovereignty and self-determination. What I want to share with some of the listeners today and what I'll be speaking about tomorrow, because what I'm all about is trying to inform and educate people throughout the world on the true history of Indigenous peoples and be a voice for our ancestors and as well as contemporary and hopefully future generations. I do a native radio program called Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, broadcast on Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio, on RadioForAll.net website in 17 stations across what is now called North America. And as I comment today, you'll hear me say a lot of times what is now called, because one of the most important aspects that I try to speak when I speak English is to use the correct names of places, geographically speaking, that are homelands to native peoples. And here in what is now called North America, Eurocentric people forget that this is our homelands, and after 517 years of colonization, now called globalization, occupation, it's important for people to really wake up and understand that native peoples are still here, we're still struggling. And it goes back to 1493, when at that time the Vatican, under Pope Alexander VI, issued a papal declaration, an official decree called the Intercetera Papal Bull. And this Vatican document that is still in effect, has never been rescinded, literally said, quote, to go forth and conquer all the lands and peoples of the non-white, non-Christian world in the name of Christendom. And so we really have to, again, when we talk about the struggle for sovereignty and self-determination, human rights, civil rights, the rights of indigenous peoples, the rights of Mother Earth, we have to really understand that this is a long historical situation. That's really the first point that I really wanted to convey today. And also I wanted to convey the point that as Native people, we're also contemporary people. I'm a university professor, although I was raised in traditional Native American community. I don't like the word reservation, but within my own homeland, although because of colonization, Bureau of Indian Abuse laws, where I come from, many of our traditional ways were really illegal until 1978 with the passage of the so-called American Indian Religious Freedom Act. I was very appreciative to hear your first guest on the phone, the Muscogee Creek brother, Adam Long, talk about within his own community their movement for agricultural sustainability and to help bring back the traditional cultural spiritual life ways of the Muscogee people. I think through radio, like your program, Mr. Whitehorse, and a lot of other fine programs that are now being done by Native brothers and sisters, we are able to help in a good way, speak the truth, speak about the accuracy of cultural history, and also to speak about contemporary situations that affect Native lands and Native peoples all over the world. And even here in what is now called Sarasota, the homeland, I guess, of the Tequesta people, Timucua, Togabogans, Apalachee, Yamasee, Calusa peoples of what's now called Florida. Many of us have been dealing with for a long time, as you are now, with the Eurocentric archaeologists and so-called anthropologists and historians who see nothing wrong with desecrating sacred sites and digging up burial sites in the name of so-called progress, in the name of so-called development. So I really want to say thank you to you for your radio program and for the work you are doing in this part of what's now called Florida.
Yes, I wanted to thank you once again. And could you mention also to our listeners why you actually came up here to visit with Sarasota?
This weekend there's a cultural education program, is the way I would phrase it, that is focusing a lot on Caribbean culture. Historically, the indigenous peoples of what's now called the Caribbean, mostly Taino, in fact, my brother here, Canuck Saba, who's with us in the studio that accompanied me, he is a Taino Beke, that is a traditional Taino person that is concerned about language, culture, and spirituality. And one of the events that's going on or this morning that we were here for was a presentation about Vieques, which is one of the islands in what is now called Puerto Rico. Actually, Canuck can say better than I. My understanding, that homeland is actually called Boroquin. One of the smaller islands of Boroquin is now called Vieques, was a situation just so similar to our own American Indian situation, where as a result of the Spanish-American War, the U.S. decided to take that as a war prize, and during World War II, the U.S. Navy in particular took over two-thirds of Vieques, or Burakin, to use as a military bombing range, weapons testing ground, used that for U.S. Marines training exercises, using things like depleted uranium. It is a situation where, I guess it was in 1999, there was a major incident where one of the U.S. jets dropped accidentally several bombs that ended up killing a citizen of Vieques. So I came up here today with my Taino brother to learn and listen to that particular historic situation, the current struggle of Vieques. And again, tomorrow I'm going to be sharing some views on how the Taino cultural history and contemporary struggle of reclaiming their sovereignty and self-determination as indigenous peoples of the Caribbean is very important to understand for the worldwide movement of indigenous peoples' struggle for justice, primarily because, again, clowns like Christopher Columbus and other colonial conquistadors first came to the so-called New World and landed in their people's homeland. So that is why I am here this weekend.
Tauka, my name is Kunuk Seiba, and I am a Beike of the Kane. I am Taino.
Yes, and we are very honored that you're here today. Once again, could you go into a little more detail of what Ones talked about, why you also drove up and plan on doing here locally in Sarasota?
We came to a conference that's speaking about the island of Vieques. Now, the Navy has used it as a target practice range. The people of Vieques have a 30% higher cancer rate than anyone from the rest of the Caribbean islands. It has been devastated by the bombings, and now, since the Navy has left the island, it is devastated. 60% unemployment rate, and it really has dropped the way of life and ability to sustain themselves on that island.
Another aspect of Vieques that is so similar to many of our Native American communities, so-called reservations, is the poisoning and contamination of our homelands. Vieques happens to be one of the most toxic sites in the Caribbean, and I call it the Environmental Pollution Agency, because really all they do is regulate pollution effluent by multinational corporations. The EPA has a so-called cleanup, quote-unquote, project there on the island. That's a Superfund site. I happen to be an ecologist by education. I can tell you, working in environmental justice for some 30 years now, that the situation of Vieques resembles so many of our native communities all over what's now called North America. And one other aspect, too, that I raised during the question and answer session this morning during the presentation was that it's really sad to me how the Taino people, just like our own Native American people up north in what's now called U.S. and Canada, have been victims of colonial whitewashing in boarding schools. There's, as you probably know, White Horse, the infamous Carlisle Indian boarding school that came out of the U.S. military. And not too long ago, I was up there, and I happened to be visiting the American Indian Cemetery, where there are burials of more than 140 children from over 140 Native communities that were kidnapped during the boarding school era. That was under the command of Captain Pratt at the time, and as he said, quote, "The whole purpose of the boarding schools was to kill the Indian in us." And as I was walking along the cemetery, there were 30 grave sites from children from Burakin, what's now called Puerto Rico. And so there are so many similarities between their cultural history from colonization and economic exploitation with, in the case of sugar industries and other multinational companies, that really they're just another indigenous peoples under U.S. colonial rule. From an environmental point of view, it's really sad how a almost once pristine ecosystem that had a healthy fisheries, that had a healthy coastal mangrove ecosystem, in less than 50 years been pretty much contaminated and polluted. And so if we are going to continue to organize indigenous peoples to stand up for our Aboriginal rights as sovereign native people, understanding the cultural history of the Taino people is very important because of, again, much of the abuse to the Western Hemisphere started in 1493.
And once again, thank you for being on today's show, and hopefully we will have you on again sometime in the future. And I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in. Hope that you'll tune in again next week. Once again, you are listening to Indigenous Sounds. I'm your host, White Horse.
You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitichi Native Center. Yat-Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal, culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat-Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat-Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat-Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat-Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat-Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat-Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat-Kitichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat-Kitichi's environmental education program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat-Kitichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat-Kitichi Native Center, write to Yat-Kitichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat-Kitichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakusin. To all of our relations.
Well, dear friends, I hope you enjoyed today's program with White Horse. I want to again thank White Horse for inviting me to be his guest on Indigenous Sounds. Please listen next week to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, for the continuation of his interview with me, Oness in program 2 of my visit with Mr. Whitehorse in the studio of WSLR-FM. Wolf Mountain Radio wishes to remind listeners that Whitehorse's show, Indigenous Sounds, airs live every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5 p.m. The program can be heard on the internet. To listen live online, go to WSLR Sarasota's website, www.wslr.org. We shall conclude today's broadcast with a song by Haudenosaunee Mohawk singer-songwriter Howard Lyons off his Sounds of America record CD, Spirit Walk. The name of the song is For Our Seventh Generation. As listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, the indigenous ethic known as the principle of the seventh generation refers to our native pedagogy to always consider how one's actions will affect Mother Earth and the well-being of all life for the next seven generations to come. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinon One Takwasin, to all of our relations.
Prayer offerings on your behalf.
Hey, when he don't know, got old, special care and their decision making to ensure us a prosperous future. Respect and honor towards our elders. We hold the truth, the secrets, the lessons of life and of our past. It is time for us to conduct ourselves properly in accordance to the ancient ways that have been entrusted to us. We preserve our strength for you. Through words, through songs, and our dance. We show our love for you.